At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Politicians and advocates are flocking to the Texas-Mexico border to visit immigration detention centers. And outrage continues to grow in Texas and across the country over the Trump administration's so-called zero-tolerance policy, which separates families accused of entering the United States without legal permission. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen posted on Twitter that the U.S. actually does not have a policy of separating families at the border. Lomi Creel is an immigration reporter with the Houston Chronicle. She talked with Texas Standard's David Brown. She says that's true.
But there is a law that makes it a federal misdemeanor to cross between a port of entry. And so what the government is saying that they're now fully enforcing that law, that nobody is exempt, and they're prosecuting anyone who crosses between a port of entry, and that parents who come with their children are not going to be spared from that.
How does that work? You stay in jail for a while if you're the adult. Then what happens to you?
So I'll just sort of walk you through the process. So okay. Border Patrol would apprehend a family, a parent and a child. They would take that parent and child to the processing center and decide to refer the parent for prosecution. The parent would stay in the Border Patrol holding cell for maybe a couple of days and then go to federal court, plead guilty quickly in a mass plea hearing, and usually get sentenced to time served or just a couple of days, serve that time, and then they go back to the custody of immigration detention for their deportation. But by that point, their children have been transferred to Health and Human Services, which takes care of unaccompanied minor children. That launches a whole process that puts them on a separate track. They're put into a federal shelter. And supposedly, they should then be reunified once their parents have served their criminal sentence. But because they're now kind of, like I said, on this separate track, advocates who work with children say that it's really difficult often to reunify the parents and the children.
Who's actually taking care of the kids?
So the federal government, through HHS, they contract with agencies like Catholic Charities or Lutheran Immigration Refugee Services that run the shelters that are licensed by the state to hold children. And so, yeah, they very specifically focused on housing immigrant children.
The Trump administration is casting this as a necessary deterrent, something to keep parents from even contemplating bringing their children illegally into the United States. I'm trying to get a sense of, I mean, why this is continuing to happen, given what parents and kids are likely to face on this side of the border.
I think the message is getting out, and I think that parents are terrified. In McAllen last week, I spoke to Sister Norma Pimentel, who runs the Catholic shelter there, and she said that she would talk to these parents and that they were really afraid of this new policy, but that they told her, we're still going to come because it's worse for us if we stay. So I think in some cases, it just really depends on the family's individual situation. And if, for instance, if a gang in El Salvador is threatening to take your daughter and force her to be part of them, you might take the risk and see what will happen if you come here.
That was Lomi Creel, an immigration reporter with the Houston Chronicle, talking with Texas Standard's David Brown. Yesterday, thousands of protesters filled the streets of Tornillo, Texas, just outside of El Paso, to rally against the separation of immigrant children from their parents. Mexico border correspondent for the Dallas Morning News, Alfredo Corchado, was on the scene. And today on Think, he talked with Chris Boyd about why people feel so passionate about this issue.
The question is, you know, how do you separate families? I mean, how do you separate children from their parents? That didn't happen before, and now it's happening. And that's really the moral question. And that's something that a lot of people were asking, you know, yesterday, is what does this say about the values of this country and who we are today as a nation?
It's really turned out to be a divisive issue within the Republican Party in particular.
Yes. And I think having Attorney General Sessions come out and use a biblical passage really offended a lot of religious leaders. Conservatives. We've seen the response from the former First Lady, Laura Bush, and even the current First Lady, Melania Trump. It's a passionate issue. I mean, that's, I think, what I walked away from yesterday's march was the passion, the sense of outrage that we're seeing, the sense of frustration from both sides.
Alfredo Corchado's new book is called Homelands, Four Friends, Two Countries, and the Fate of the Great Mexican-American Migration. Fewer refugees are coming to the United States following President Trump's admissions cap. But of the refugees who do enter the country, many end up in Texas. They may arrive with little, but they bring enough with them to keep old traditions flourishing. In Dallas, there are a handful of community gardens where refugees plant their favorite vegetables from home. As Megan Zarez reports, they're growing new traditions and helping shape the city's culture through food.
It's an overcast spring morning at the East Dallas Community Garden. Voontath is preparing this weekend's harvest, heirloom lettuce and Cambodian bunching onions. She'll take some of it home to feed her family, but most of it will end up on other tables, in homes and restaurants all over North Texas. She's one of several hundred refugee gardeners who hold plots at community gardens across Dallas.
When I live in Thailand, I do the garden too. I set a vegetable for living.
Tath fled the Cambodian genocide of 1975. She spent 10 years in a refugee camp in Thailand before coming to the U.S. Tath was part of an influx of refugees who came to Dallas in the early 90s. As they fled civil wars and genocides, they managed to bring a little piece of home along with them.
Most people, as they move from one country to another, have often brought little samples of seeds that are special to them.
That's Don Lambert. He directs gardeners in community development.
Somebody had a couple of pumpkin seeds in their pocket or something, and they would find a little spot of ground somewhere around an apartment building or in a vacant lot, and they'd start trying to grow stuff.
In the beginning, that created some conflict. Landlords weren't pleased to find sprawling vines taking over their flower beds. So a coalition of refugees and resettlement agents sought to fix that problem.
They managed to get a piece of land on Fitzhugh. Around 1987, 88, they built and opened a garden.
That coalition became Gardeners in Community Development, which Lambert has headed for over 25 years. Back in the garden, Tath is tending to her plot and selling produce at a small stand. As I'm talking with her, a longtime friend shows up. Catalina Lino comes to the garden every week to stock up on vegetables and herbs. And of course, to catch up with her friend Tath. They met right here at this garden in Vickery Meadow, a neighborhood where both women have ties. Lino is a part of the large Latino community within North Texas. She's found that there's an overlap in the foods that Latinos and Southeast Asians eat, like culantro, different types of peppers, and pumpkin flowers.
Especially the, what do you call them, with the yellow flower, flor de calabaza. And those are real good fried.
The thing is, for a long time, you couldn't find those ingredients in North Texas. According to the U.S. State Department, Texas settles more refugees than any other state. And these refugees have been shaping the way that people eat across North Texas. Sandy Bussey is one of the chef owners of Bibibop, a Korean fusion restaurant with locations across Dallas.
In this day and age, I do think a lot of those heritage vegetables and things are slowly going away.
Heritage vegetables, or heirlooms, are cultivars that have been passed down from generation to generation. It's rare to find these varieties in supermarkets, so that's why Bussey turns to small growers, like Tath.
We do the Chinese long beans, and if you actually pick it off and you eat it, I mean, the snap on it and everything is just so much better. I mean, if you think about it, you're actually picking off something and it's still living, but if you go to the grocery store, it's on its dying state.
These heirloom vegetables may be local produce now, but Lambert says it's taken 30 years and a mass migration of immigrants and refugees to make this produce available for North Texans.
There was a kind of an organic process going on in which lots of people were going to the Asian garden and getting seed and planting materials, learning how to grow those things in backyards and whatnot all over Dallas, not just by the Asian community, but a lot of other people as well.
Today, it's common to find things like lemongrass, moringa, and pumpkin blossoms in markets and kitchens all over North Texas. Like the immigrants that brought them here, those ingredients are now a part of Dallas. For KERA News, I'm Megan Zarez.
You can see photos of Tath's produce as it travels from plot to plate at keranews.org. Cloudy skies in store for us later tonight. There's a 20% chance for showers with a low around 75 this evening. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance for storms with high around 87. At 6:30, this is KERA News.